Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. What does it take to turn a dream into a thriving business and then do it all over again? My guest today, Rod Rubin, is an entrepreneur, visionary, and author of the new book, Gold in Your Backyard. Ron will share powerful lessons about leadership, innovation, company culture, and discovering opportunities that may already be right in front of us. Ron took a small, little-known tea company called the Republic of Tea and transformed it into an industry leader celebrated for wellness, creativity, and social responsibility. And then in his 60s, he pursued another lifelong dream, purchasing a small Sonoma County winery and growing River Road Family Vineyards and winery into another bold and successful venture. But Gold in Your Backyard is much more than a business book. It's a roadmap for living with passion, purpose, optimism, and courage. Ron reminds us that success isn't only about profits, it's about people, vision, perseverance, and believing that extraordinary opportunities may already exist in our own backyard. Gold in Your Backyard, Lessons in Life, Leadership, and the Power of a Dream is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about the book, go to goldinyourbackyard.com, goldinyourbackyard.com, and you can follow Ron on LinkedIn. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure. I want to start with a global question for you because I loved your book. And I think that there's something that people miss these days, and maybe both of us have been around a while to see that decline. But why is there such a negativity about entrepreneurship, and more specifically capitalism, in terms of being able to pursue dreams that you want to pursue? Where did that all come from? Have you have a sense of that when you're writing the book?
Well, not really, but I think it came from the Forbes 500 or more billionaires, and everybody wants to be a billionaire today. And, you know, it's all about money and making money and, you know, but there's a lot more to life than just making money.
Yeah, and that's a big part of your book because you talk about a balanced life, a balanced work week, which obviously enhances morale and productivity. How did you come to that conclusion? I know there's a lot of things we could cover, but you have to read the book because we won't be able to do it in 30 minutes. But in terms of an overall message that you would like people to have from reading your book, what would that be?
Well, my number one lesson was find a mentor. And I was blessed to have three mentors in my life. My dad, of course, Frank Ferez, who was a salesperson for us, and Julian Vineski. And so I think, where did I come up with a lot of these ideas and thoughts and leadership? It was really from my mentors. And I highly recommend, I still have a mentor today, and I learn everything from my mentors. And I think that's where you start. You know, someone that's been there, done that. For me personally, this is my 54th year in business. I hope to share a lot of lessons with your readers and listeners that they won't find in Harvard MBA class or any kind of an MBA class today. And this is lessons that I've learned through my career.
The one thing you just said, which is interesting, because there are a lot of people, with egos, and they think if they're successful in one area, that that's it. And then they certainly don't mind mentoring other people, but they think they don't have anything else to learn. What you just said a moment ago is that you still have mentors.
That's correct. Yeah.
And what are they teaching you these days? Because you are so successful with these various businesses we talked about and your approach to life. What are they teaching you today that surprises you?
Well, one of the things that the three keys of success in business, which I had never heard before. And so my mentor said, well, there's only three keys, Ron, in business. I said, that's it? Tell me. I want to know.
Exactly.
And the first key was, you know, customer satisfaction. If you can't satisfy your customer, you're not going to have a business. Okay, I understand that. And then the second key was employee satisfaction. And, you know, if you're not paying your employees, you're not providing the benefits, you're not, you know, taking care of your employees, you won't have a business. Okay, I understand that one. Right. And then the third key to success in business is cash flow. And who thinks about cash flow? But that is correct. You know, I wish everybody would learn about cash flow. You know, these entrepreneurs today, they go out and they sell. They need more inventory and they don't have any money coming in. You know, people they sold to are holding on for 60-day credit, 90-day credit, and it's all about cash flow. And I think that that's such a crucial lesson.
Shouldn't number three be number one? And then you can get
Probably number one. That's correct. I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, because then you can satisfy your customers because you've got the doors still open.
That's correct.
And you can help your employees by keeping the doors open if you they got that cash flow going.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. You seem to be a very happy guy. Is it just that you feel you're blessed with all of the information and success you've had?
I think that, and just, you know, what I learned from my mentors, you know, one of the lessons that I've, you know, kept in my whole life was from my dad, because he grew up in the Depression, was how to run a business with no debt. And so, you know, my dad, I saw him run our family wholesale wine and liquor business with no debt. I saw him personally have no debt. You know, his house was paid for, his car was paid for, you know. And I just think that he taught me that. So that's what I've kind of tried to teach our children and also others. When I bought the Republic of Tea in 1994, the people would ask me, well, how big a company do you want to have, Ron? You know, how much are your sales going to be? And were you, what are your goals on that? And I wasn't even thinking about that. I was thinking about how fast can I pay off Southwest Bank, the loan and the amount of money I borrowed from them to buy the company. And that took me 6 years, 3 months, and 15 days.
You have it down to the day. Okay.
You bet. June 15th of 2000. And so, you know, I look back now and 26 years later, you know, our company is still debt-free, the Republic of Tea. And, you know, people ask me, well, how did you buy a winery? You know, you had to have a lot of money to buy a winery. Well, that was a 40-year dream. And, you know, if you save a little for 40 years, we have no debt at our winery because I had saved the money. So I think the message here is really trying to figure out how to eliminate that debt. I think for a company, you know, especially a family business, you know, no debt is a responsibility to those employees that come to work for you. You want them to have a strong business. And today you see, you pick up the Wall Street Journal, this company laid off 5,000 people, this company laid off. And, you know, so I'm happy that you feel much better that you don't have debt in your life.
Do you think that it could be you're not saying, number one, never go and borrow money to get going. What you're really saying is get rid of that debt as soon as you can. Is there a double-edged sword in that? And let me explain what I mean by that. On the one hand, being debt-free, which is wonderful, especially in your personal life, but also in your business life, it's wonderful because it removes a lot of stress that doesn't have to be there. On the other hand, does it create a lack of incentive or motivation because you don't feel the compulsion to be more productive because you've got that debt hanging over you?
Oh, if you have the debt hanging over you, yes. Oh, yeah. You're not going to be as innovative. You're not going to, you know, take as many risks. You're not going to look for other opportunities because you're worried about how you're going to pay the bank off. And so
I guess what I'm asking is, if you're free from debt, you don't have that stress, but on the other hand, you don't necessarily feel the motivation to grow and expand.
Just the reverse.
Okay. That's what I'm asking. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Just the reverse.
Okay.
You know, when other people have to pinch pennies and, you know, we're having some difficulty in the wine business today, you know, just with the consumption.
Right.
We're innovating. We're bringing new packages out. We're really trying to do something different in the business to grow the business. So not worrying about the fact that I had to go pay a bank off and make a payment every month, I take those resources that we have and use them to grow our business.
No, that makes sense. For our viewers, I mean, for our listeners, we have viewers and listeners, but the listeners won't understand this reference, but our viewers will. Ron and I are starting the Republic of Hats. So that's a new company that we're working on.
Okay.
The show. So tell us a little bit about the five P's.
Well, the five P's are pre-plan prevents poor performance. And we've used that as in a DNA of our businesses and in our life. My children know it, our family knows it, but it's pre-plan, you know. And what it really means is you might have to go somewhere for an important meeting and you go in the day before, you know, not going in the same day. I have this podcast. I pre-planned for the podcast. I knew you were in Las Vegas. You know, I tried to learn everything I could, use a little ChatGPT here, listen to your podcast. I knew you were wearing your hat on your and all that is pre-planning to prevent poor performance. You know, you just can't go in a meeting today, I don't think, and not be prepared. And to be over-prepared is a great feeling. That takes a lot of stress off of you. So we use the five P's, pre-plan prevents poor performance.
And also I should point out that when I first came and was waiting for you, you were already there just as I signed on. So I go on 5 minutes before to get everything ready technically. And yes, Ron was there. And I mentioned to him that if you're on time, you're late. You got to get there early, which is great. How do you communicate? And there's so much information in the book. How do you communicate some of that to I'll call it the current generation. And the only reason I call it, I don't want to be very specific about what generation we're talking about, because attitudes change over the decades and through the generations, but your principles are pretty much standardly applied. But do you find that there's a lack of understanding in the current generation about basic business principles, basic understanding of cash flow, debt, being debt-free, planning, et cetera?
No doubt about that. I think, unfortunately, they're not teaching I wouldn't say common sense, but things that are important, just like you said. You know, for me, one of the lessons I learned was term insurance. You know, it's like, why should you buy term insurance when you're young? Why do you even need insurance while you're young? I don't know if they teach that lesson in business school or not, but, you know, if you have a family, a young family, and you're in business and you have a lot of debt and you have a mortgage on your house and the business owes a lot of money and God forbid a crisis happens, you know, don't you want to have term insurance that's rather inexpensive that would help pay off all these debts and leave your family and your business in better shape? And what I learned from my experience of having term insurance, when I had a heart problem or situation, I could no longer get insurance.
Pre-condition, exactly.
Yeah, pre-condition, you can't. Right. And so, you know, those are some of the things. I also highly recommend that you write thank you notes. You know, where has that gone? You know, well, I sent an email thank you. Well, that's not a thank you note.
You're talking about a handwritten thank you note, right?
Yeah, a handwritten thank you note.
I've always done that and for decades. And it's a lost, I don't want to say it's a lost art, but it's a lost concept for some reason. I think it's because everybody's so used to it. But it makes such a big impact when you get a note from someone thanking you for doing something for them.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
So you're definitely old school, but it's also what you should be doing.
Right. And it separates you. It's, you know, it really makes a difference.
Yeah, it really does. Well, when you were putting together your different businesses, what was the biggest risk or challenge you had in putting together or expanding the businesses? And it's not necessarily financial. It could be something with the market. It could be.
I can tell you what it is. I can answer that question for you.
Thank you.
I think getting the right members, the right team together, and making sure that their DNA fit your profile of that individual you wanted on your team. I can give you a couple examples.
Please.
One example is that customer service. So in customer service, you really want someone that might be on the phone answering a problem, that has a lot of empathy. Okay. You know, they can talk about, I'm sorry that this misshipped. I'm sorry your tin got dented. We're going to do everything we can to get you your product. You know, that has empathy in their DNA. If you want a salesperson, you should have a salesperson that has what's called a strong ego drive. Okay. So, you know, you go in and they get turned down. Okay. I'll go to the next customer. You know, okay. I don't care. I'll come back and see him later. But, you know, it doesn't affect them. And, you know, so my challenge was trying to determine these traits and DNA of these individuals that I wanted to put together for the team. And I came up with a personality dynamics testing that I think is one of the keys to our success that we use today in all our businesses. And it really gives me an understanding, besides just doing a face-to-face interview, of really what the dynamics of that individual is. So when I hired our sales team, I had all these men and women that had strong egos. And, you know, we would come to a sales meeting and they would say, well, I got this 50 case display, you know, of wine. And the next salesperson, well, that's nothing. Mine was 100 cases, you know, and they're all competing with each other. And so I think that having the right dynamics. Now, for me personally, I have a mild sales ego. So when we go to a national sales meeting, I'll let the sales manager close the deal. I'll stand there next to him. But I think getting the right people in the right jobs, you know, based on their, let's say, DNA, you know. So that would be my answer.
Do you ever find any pushback when you want to give this test to potential salespeople or other employees?
I don't think we find any pushback when we tell them that's part of the interview process.
Okay, got it.
And we use it for all the positions, not just, you know, executive positions or every position we use that for. And the other thing, as far as the test is concerned, you know, when I have a two excellent candidates and I can't make a decision, I use the test as a tiebreaker. I've always used it. So, you know, if you've got an 80 score on the test and someone got a 90, you know, for the tiebreaker will be the test. I'll go with the 90. So,
do you find that people today, I'll go back to this because I've encountered this over the years as well, and being in business and working in the tourism business, that you'll have someone that applies to your company for a position, and you could readily, by asking one or two simple questions, realize they didn't do any research. They didn't do the Ron Rubin approach. They didn't plan.
Mm-hmm.
They just went in and they thought through their force of personality or whatever it is that they're going to get the job. But then you ask them a simple question about your business and they have no clue.
That's correct. I find that all the time. Yeah. You know, it disturbs me, you know. But I also find professional. We were searching for a public relations firm and I had a number of interviews. I walked into this one firm at 9 o'clock in the morning, met the owner. And the first thing he asked me is, would you like a cup of coffee? And here I am, the Republic of Tea. I took the word coffee out of my vocabulary. And the first thing they offer me is a cup of coffee. I didn't even want to go on with the meeting.
Well, your first mistake was getting there at 9. You should have been there at 8:55. But that is funny. It's clear that you didn't think that through in terms of beverage. Yeah, especially that's the business. Come on, guys.
Right.
Yeah, that's very funny. Do you find, though, that because you're gracious with your time and you know the benefit of having a mentor and being a mentor, that even on those people that applied for a position with your firm, that you realize that they didn't research, they don't have no idea what they're talking about. Do you take a few minutes and say, hey, look, next time you go interview someone or with some company, research the company so you know what you're talking about?
Not really.
Okay. You know,
I just move on.
Okay. That's the hard-headed business part of you, right? Yeah, it can be. No, that makes sense. If the, well, I don't think I asked you this question initially when we started. And I usually start as one of the very first questions. So now's a good time. Why did you decide to write the book? Because you have all this life knowledge and you're still learning, obviously, but there must have been a burning reason for you to write the book. Because writing a book is not an easy thing. You can write an essay, you can write a blog, and that's all well and good.
Mm-hmm.
But to write a book takes time and rewriting and editing.
I can tell you exactly. I think it's 2 years.
Yeah, you see my
book. 85 days.
So, but what, anyway, what was burning about you inside of you that you wanted to write the book?
Well, I think.
Ron, it's called Gold in Your Backyard, available as I mentioned on Amazon, Barnes Noble, and all the usual places.
I think the big motivation for me, you know, I guess I should share this. I don't talk about this, but I wanted to honor my dad. You know, my dad was my mentor. The best part of the book for me is the dedication. It's the first page that I honor my dad because, you know, that he taught me many of the lessons that are in this book. And I think any success that I've had, not only in life, but in business, is it's really, you know, it was important that my mom and dad did a really good job, you know, and I wanted to dedicate the book to my dad. The book, in the beginning, I did a lot of speaking to Young Presidents Organization, YPO, and I would tell them the top 10 ways to succeed in business and life. And then every year I decided that, well, maybe what stood out in that particular year, you know, what lesson did I learn? And so I accumulated this list over 50 years of 50 different lessons. And so in the lessons, to read the lessons in the book, as you know, they're only 2 or 3 pages. It's not like a big chapter. And we're trying to be specific as I can. And so it was somewhat like me giving a speech, but writing it down for a book. So,
but you said you obviously the dedication is the important part for you because of your dad. But what was the reasoning for writing the book itself, though? What you wanted to communicate something to people? You had all these notes that you took over all these years. See where I'm going with that?
Well, I do. I think it was because I just wanted to give back to individuals that, you know, here's what lessons that you're not going to learn, you know, in business school. And share my experiences and just help, you know. First of all, I guess that's, I don't know if that's a good answer.
If it's a true answer, it's a true answer. That's why I came back to it, because my one bad habit is when I ask a guest a question and they quite haven't answered it, I come back to it to make sure that they
That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, can I tell you one quick story?
Absolutely.
And one of the lessons is to train your people in CPR and first aid and have a automated external defibrillator. I had a friend that read the book. He has a business. He said that it inspired him to go out and get his management team trained in CPR and to go buy an AED for his business. Then he called me up about 4 or 5 months later, and he says, "Ron, you won't believe this story." He said, "We had a 37-year-old warehouseman drop and have a sudden cardiac arrest in our business." He said, "I was so proud of my team. They started immediately CPR on this individual. They went and got the defibrillator. It shocked him 4 times, but it brought his heart rate back. And then the emergency people got there to help and saved his life." And he says, "Ron, your book saved my life, you know, saved a life." I said, "Well, it wasn't me. You know, you made the effort to get your team trained and to go out and buy an AED. But, you know, so there's something in the book that helped save someone's life." So
that's the thing about the book. It's not just about, as you mentioned, it's not about just profits. It's about people. Right. And so you have that mix. And I think ongoing training is important, too, because even if you train in those devices and how to do them, you have to almost not retrain, but you have to keep training to remember.
Every 2 years. Exactly. Yeah. We get certified every 2 years.
But just the fact that they didn't panic and they were able to help the guy and he lived, which is great in that sense. When you put the book together, you mentioned about taking notes over all those years. And these are not complicated pieces of advice. These are simple pieces of advice, which I think helps a lot too. Was there something that you left out of the book that you perhaps will save for book number two?
Oh, I kept lesson number 51 and lesson 52 and 53.
Well, you never stop learning. You told me you have a mentor, so you might be learning more stuff to put in another book.
Right. But I don't think there was anything I left out that I can think of.
I meant to ask you earlier, and I just thought of it too, when you're talking about your dad, which was impressive. Did your folks live long enough to see your early success?
No, my dad passed away when he was 71 years old, and we did work together for 17 years, from 1972 to 1989 when he died. 1990, I got into the water business with Clearly Canadian. And 1994 was the Republic of Tea. And of course, 2011 was the winery. So unfortunately, he didn't. My mom got to see a little bit of it, but not as much as I had liked.
Okay. But at least your family sees it now and learns lessons from it as well. Before I let you go, is there one example you can give? I like the one that you gave of the CPR. But is there another one you can give real quick of just people that have read the book and have taken a lesson from it and you've gotten feedback from them about one piece of advice that you gave within the book?
Oh, I've gotten many lessons, many people. But I'll give you one kind of a cute one. One, I talk about manicures. Get a manicure, you know, right, and the importance of hygiene in a manicure. And, you know, you're not going to hear that at Harvard Business School or wherever, you know, but it's important. I get a manicure every week. I'm getting one tomorrow. So anyway, an attorney from Chicago, I won't tell you the firm, but, you know, he read the book and I couldn't wait to hear what he had to say. And I asked him, I said, what's the most important thing to you? Did you learn in the book? And he says, Ron, I'm going to go out and get a manicure. He says, I work with papers all the time. I'm in front of my clients all the time with, you know, estate planning and papers. And he says, I never thought about looking at my nails and how bad they look. I'm going to go out and get a manicure. Now, that was the last thing I thought I would hear from him. But that was one of my lessons. Get a manicure.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Ron Rubin. He's author of Gold in Your Backyard, Lessons in Life, Leadership, and the Power of a Dream. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about the book, go to goldinyourbackyard.com, goldinyourbackyard.com, and you can follow Ron on LinkedIn. And Ron, thanks for being on the show.
It was an honor. Pleasure.
Thank you. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on IRA's Everything Bagel.